Good morning, everybody. I'm glad to see you're still here, so thank you very much. I just wanted to let you know that we have some flyers in the back, so if you do step out early or at the end, this is the flyer about the program that gives you a little bit more detail and also the website and everything that I'm going to talk about today. And then we also have a flyer about our expanding work in global health at the Public Health Institute. And there's also a flyer from an organization called the Center for Digital Storytelling that we worked with to develop digital stories on adolescent health, sexual reproductive health and rights in Latin America. And I presented some of the videos that, I don't know if any of you, were any of you at the video showing? Great, okay, so this will give you a little bit more of an idea of what the program's actually about. So feel free to pick up any of those and then also contact me or my colleagues with any additional questions. So I'm going to really talk about sort of the social justice approach that we use in our program and also the content of this program. It's a global health program, so it's sort of going from the U.S. now down probably on Continental, we were talking about as our favorite airline, no, down to Central America. And it's not a research, I'm not going to talk about research, so it's not a research study, but it does talk about some evaluation that was self-reported on the part of the youth leaders in terms of how this program has impacted both their leadership development and their intended sort of leadership behavior and practice. No financial. A lot of time investment in this, but no financial. I don't think to disclose. So, as mentioned, I direct this program. It's called El Programa de Liderazgo Joven en Salud Sexual Reproductiva, and we call it the Youth Leadership and Sexual Reproductive Health Program in English. It's run by the International Health Programs of the Public Health Institute. We're based in Oakland, California. We have an office also in Guatemala, in Chimaltenango. It's funded by the Summit Foundation, a family foundation in DC, and we've been funded, we've been very fortunate to have three series of 3 years of funding. For all of you that work in program, that's pretty incredible. So we have been funded since 2004, and we have the program through 2012. And we, as mentioned, we focus in Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, and Quintana Roo, Mexico. Quintana Roo, Mexico is where Cancun and Playa del Carmen and Tulum is for any of those of you who've been to Cancun but didn't really realize you were in Quintana Roo. So these are some of the maps. Not really easy to see. We work in all of different regions within the countries. Some of the reasons that we've actually started this program was obviously a huge percentage of the population at the regional level is under the age of 15, so 44%, an extremely high prevalence rate for Central America. So this is not a high prevalence rate in terms of looking at African context, but Belize actually in Central America has the highest HIV prevalence rate. And up to 60% of new HIV infections are among youth under the age of 25. In Belize. Very high teenage pregnancy rate in Honduras, and 49% of Hondurans, young women, have their first child by the age of 20, and 45% of Guatemalan women have their first child also by the age of 20. In Guatemala, maternal mortality rate is 240 over 100,000 for 100,000 births, and this is one of the highest in Central America. And it also brings Guatemala into one of the highest reproductive sort of risk categories. And Guatemala receives sort of more funding and sort of equal status with some of the African countries and Asian countries in terms of looking at need to reduce maternal mortality. In Quintana Roo, Mexico. Mexico actually has pretty good sex education programs. There's a lot of advocacy around that. But nonetheless, the age of first sexual intercourse has been reported by the young people themselves is around age 15. But what we really whereas we look at these as sort of reasons why we need to look at adolescent sexual and reproductive health, really the lack of opportunities and the lack of support for youth leadership is really why we focus on the importance of youth themselves being able to look and address these issues. And then there also that youth are really left out of decision making and policy making, and therefore are not really encouraged to really be active members of their society or their democracies. So, with that context, our program has two primary objectives. One is to strengthen the capacity of the organizations working locally to create lasting improvements in sexual and reproductive health and rights for young people in their countries. So that's the really working with the organizations themselves. And then what I'm going to talk about mainly today is actually working with the young people to improve adolescent sexual and reproductive health and rights programs, policies, and outcomes by developing the next generation of young leaders in the region. So looking at sort of what is our leadership philosophy, really drawing on the fact that we really believe that in order to really make change requires power, and thus we really focus on this sort of strengthening the power and the leadership of the young people themselves. We really try and identify individuals in their communities that really have some sort of agency, so they have some experienced leadership and some real passion and some real vision around wanting to create change in their communities and also change in the systems. Really focusing on leadership for us as enabling others to achieve a common purpose, often in face of uncertainty. And we, GoHoven really focuses on team, national, and regional leadership as a creation of collective capacity to be able to create change, and looking at transforming local resources into power. So really seeing these young people as really these local resources that can really create change and have a really powerful voice in making that happen. Some of the social justice values and principles that we implement and incorporate into our program are really advancing equity and social justice. And we really believe that this is really important to do through human rights and reproductive rights framework. So that's really sort of the framework that we include in our program. And really this sort of youth power approach, so it's not youth participation, and it's not youth as recipients of the program. It's really around youth and power themselves. And the values that we really try and infuse into all of the activities that we do, even from the very beginning of the program, are really values of equality, inclusion, collaboration, celebrating diversity is a really big issue, respect, humility, compassion, and love. And one of the things that whenever we ask the young people to look at what are the values that they embody in terms of the work that they do, as leaders, humility is one of the things that comes up a lot, which I think is slightly different than the way we look at leadership in the U.S. So how do we go about actually using the social justice lens? We really select a really diverse group of youth leaders. And through this, we really address racism, inequity, and inequality in power, beginning with this selection. And we really select young people that, and these are ages 18 to 30, so they're not adolescents. Like, these are sort of young leaders, young adults, senior youth, kind of depending on however they, you know, sort of identify. But most of them do really still identify as youth. Even if they have children, even if they kind of work in adult contexts and things like that, they, especially through the program, they actually get more in touch with their youth spirit and challenges. So we really select youth from underrepresented, marginalized, and disadvantaged communities. For instance, we select a lot of youth from rural communities, a lot of Mayan indigenous youth, the Amerindian, Black Amerindian Garifuna youth that are on the coast of the Caribbean in Central America, Creole youth. We select gay and lesbian youth, disabled youth, and youth from that are less formally educated or from really poor areas. And around 30% of our young people are either Mayan or of African heritage. In countries that range from like 10 to 60% indigenous, it sort of depends. They go through a year-long fellowship program with a series of 4-week-long, very intensive leadership workshops that are scheduled over about every 3 months. And then they do a year-long practicum where they actually put into practice this collective leadership to improve adolescent sexual and reproductive health. And the training that we work with them on is really addressing class, racism, and gender inequality. It's through a design that's really based on popular education models and also on adult education theory. So the fellows themselves are really leaders of their own learning processes, and they really participate in a mix of experiential and classroom-based training exercises that address issues of power, inequality, and discrimination, as well as looking at their sociopolitical context. And they also really engage in an intercultural dialogue and shared intercultural experiences and alliance building among these young people from very different cultural class backgrounds. And we try and select about 50% men and 50% women, and really look at a lot of gender inequality and potential for gender equality and equity issues. So the training curriculum includes a series of themes that fall into three principal categories. One is sexual and reproductive health and rights based on human rights, and then leadership, and then program development and program planning and management. And we also really work to have them create a really strong network so that they could actually practice their leadership as a stronger force and sort of a mobilizing force in the region. And they really use that network to build relational commitment to each other, not just to the issue or not just to the topic, but really to each other. And we have biannual regional meetings, national meetings, social networking, and sort of virtual communication that happens with these young people, not only at a national level, but also regionally. So it's a regional program, and we select a team from each one of the four countries each year, and then we bring them together for the training. So they're actually meeting their sort of peers doing similar work, but from different countries that have some different, a lot of similar challenges, but also some different cultural contexts. And then we also really involve our alumni back into the program. As you can tell, we have implemented this program. We're in our third phase now, so we have a lot of alumni, and we actually bring them back in as trainers and as educators and as consultants and staff and recruiters and mentors and advisors. So hopefully the program is becoming even more and more sort of led by them as we move forward. Some just sort of overall results. We've really worked to develop the vision, commitment, and capacity of, up to this point, over 140 of these youth leaders, and to really advance acceptance, equity, and social justice throughout Mesoamerica. And we've also really worked to strengthen the competency of over 300 local organizations and institutions to really be able to support these leaders' efforts to create change. Because as we know, we can do a lot of our own personal development, but if where we work, they don't support that. A lot of what we learn, maybe even a lot of what we learned at APHA, we want to take back and implement, but if our supervisor doesn't want us to, we have less of an ability to really do so. Okay, great. So some of the impact that I just wanted to talk about in terms of, that this is self-reported impact of the program on them. In terms of self-reflection and self-knowledge, so this was a survey that we did with them in 2008, and we asked them how effective the program was in building their leadership capacity. And these are some leadership skills that we feel like are really important in terms of their ability to actually promote social equity and social justice. So self-reflection and self-knowledge, they said that it really helped them, it was very effective. 76% people said it was very effective in helping them to be able to have stronger capacity in terms of self-reflection and self-knowledge. Self-confidence, about 78% of them. 22 said satisfactorily, and 78% said very effective. Taking personal and professional risks, we focus on a lot, and 91% said that the program was very effective in increasing their capacity in that. Giving and receiving feedback to colleagues, again, in terms of relationship building, 70% said that was very effective. And then valuing diversity, gender, and interculturalism, which was really one of our primary focuses, was really 94% said that that was something that really helped strengthen their ability in that. And then also composing a team and working in teams, 61% said that it was very effective in helping them do that. So in terms of recognizing their strengths and challenges as a leader, their ability to do this before, they said, was sort of 0%, and then afterwards it was 91%. The recognizing their own biases and prejudices, 2% said that before the program they were able to really do this, and 80% said that afterwards they were really able to do this. In terms of also being promoted to or advancing to positions with greater leadership influence and responsibility in their own work, They said that about 4% of them before the program were able to, felt like they were sort of moving forward in their leadership capacity and in positions, and 91% said that after the program they were actually able to move more to this. So I'm just going to go ahead and go through here to get to the point where we're actually talking about, well, what are they doing with this program? So what they're really doing, they have to create, we talked about the practicum, they have to create a leadership action plan. It's a team action plan. As any of us know that we've tried to work in a team, working in teams is very hard, especially if you don't get to choose your own team. So these are groups of 4 to 6 young people from very different backgrounds, purposefully put together to try and create a project. To try and teach them how to do collective leadership across multiple sectors and across multiple disciplines. And so they have to develop a team plan, but some of the team plans that they've developed really have shown that they do a lot of work in actually building the leadership in other youth and other adolescents, building organizational networks, working in media advocacy and education and sensitivity raising. And for instance, we had one of our first teams in Belize in 2004 really worked with really at-risk, other at-risk youth in Belize to train them to be peer educators so that they would work with out-of-school youth back in their communities. And they really worked with community collaboration and radio programs. And another project. So we also work on, they work on, during their leadership action plan implementation, enabling and empowering excluded and disadvantaged youth. And our 2006 Belize team also worked along the border of Guatemala and Belize with a very low income, lack of opportunity, a lot of violence and lack of services. And they really worked with the community and other young people in terms of how to work with the disadvantaged youth around sexual and reproductive rights. They do a lot of multi-sectoral collaboration in their leadership action plans, and then they do a lot of work in addressing issues of gender and class also in the projects that they do. So we sort of see the work that they're doing and the work that we're trying to do with these young leaders as really social justice in action. We're really working to help the young people gain more power in their communities, that the program's actually creating these agents of change or strengthening these agents of change, not necessarily creating, because most of them, they're already brought in because they're doing a certain amount of work, but we really help facilitate that. Addressing issues of race, class, and gender, mobilizing, organizing youth and organizations, and then organizational leadership. And the next step of our work with these leaders is really to address the more structural issues of racism, class, and gender inequality, because right now we're working a lot with them and they're working a lot with other youth and communities, but not yet to the point where they're really sort of critiquing and sort of taking on sort of the power establishment. Also in working with the organizations to ensure that they incorporate leadership development of youth in their organizations and support leadership practices of youth. And together, we really hope that the organizations and youth leaders can work together to advocate for policies and legislation and local and national governance that support equity and equality and increasingly address the social determinants of sexual and reproductive health of adolescents and youth. So that's sort of the next step for us. And as Cornel West says, love is what social justice looks like. So thank you very much.
Take 5 minutes of questions for Esther Trevier.
That's a very good question. We have been a part over the, I'm sorry, do we have plans to actually measure the sexual and reproductive health outcomes in terms of health outcomes of either these leaders themselves or of the young people that they're working with in their communities? And we have been a part of a lot of different programs with multiple different organizations that are working on leadership development. And even though some of the big foundations have put a lot of money into leadership development for a while and then also funded sort of elaborate evaluations that we're supposed to be getting at the impact and actually health impact, none of the evaluators have actually ever gotten to the impact level on the health outcomes. So I think it's something that we recognize as really important. Obviously, investing in leadership development is a long-term investment, but we have been investing in leadership development now for 8 years with these young people, so we would love to be able to have the resources to be able to do some of that impact evaluation. And I think it is really important if we want to continue to have investment in capacity building, investment in leadership development, to be able to look at some of those health outcomes. Thank you.